maybe you're a sports fan like me. And so maybe one of the pictures that pops up into your mind is a basketball player who has the ball in their hands with 5 seconds left and they're down by 1 point. And you know that they are about to do everything in their power to make their way to the basket. Or maybe you picture an innovator who works deep into the night, hours on end, week after week after week, to bring this idea in their head into reality, to fruition. Or maybe you picture a musician who's picked up this new piece of music and they practice and they practice and they practice until finally they have absolutely mastered it. Those are some of the pictures that come up in my head. But if I'm honest, the predominant picture of what it looks like to be resolved is this guy. This is my son, Sam, and he represents a group of people named toddlers. Some of you here in this room have a toddler right now. Others of you have had toddlers in the past, and I'm sure you remember it well. Still yet, others of you are getting to experience toddlerhood all over again as grandparents, and isn't it wild and wonderful, right? But if you have ever been around a toddler at all, then you know that look that they get in their eyes when they have resolved, when they have decided that they are going to do something no matter what, come what may. Sam is now 4 years old, and so I have gotten to witness his resolve in fantastic fashion over those years. For example, here he is resolved to turn on the light switch all by himself. You have to give him points for resourcefulness, right? Or here he is resolved to dress himself. Yes, that is a shirt that he's wearing as pants, and I think that's pants he's using as leg warmers there. Or here he is resolved to get into his bed without any help from anyone else. He did get stuck a little bit there. He asked for help soon after, but he was trying his best. Or finally, here he is resolved to get his chocolate milk all by himself. Bless y'all. Now you all know how you can pray for me, all right? Send all the prayer you can my way. But toddlers know how to resolve to do something, don't they? Well, throughout the season of Lent, we are going to be stepping into the story of Jesus at all these different points through the perspective of the book of Matthew. And today we join Jesus as he stands like on the very edge of his earthly ministry. And what we discover as he stands there is that before he has gotten a single follower, before he has a single disciple, before he has spoken to a single crowd, before he has healed any person, Jesus was resolved. Jesus already had that toddler-like look in his eye. He was firmly determined. He was settled on a solution. He was intent on a direction. Matthew 4 begins like this. It says, "Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil." And that very first word there that we usually just like buzz right through is actually very important, that word "then," because it tips us off that something significant has already happened. And so we need to know, what precipitated this trip into the wilderness? What has led to it? And if we take a quick glance back to see what's come before, what we discover is that Jesus has just been baptized by his camel hair wearing, locust eating, repentance preaching cousin, John, in the Jordan River. But as Jesus had been coming up out of the water, he had had this very powerful experience. The Spirit of God had descended on him like a dove, and he had heard a voice from heaven saying this, "This is my son, whom I love. With him, I am well pleased." This is my son. And the days and the weeks and the years ahead, Jesus was going to have all kinds of other titles and labels placed on him. Titles and labels like Messiah and Rabbi and healer and teacher, traitor, demon possessed even. But right here, from the outset, God wants to make it clear that first and foremost, above and beyond everything else, this is who Jesus is. Jesus is his son. His son that he loves and his son he takes great pleasure in. But this does then create this question for us. What's yet to be seen after this powerful experience is how Jesus is going to respond to what has just been proclaimed. The question is, will Jesus now resolve to make this loving relationship between him and his father the thing that is going to drive everything else that will follow? It's a fair question, because if you step back and you look at the big story of Scripture, you'll see that this isn't the first time that God has made these kinds of proclamations. We look back and we see the story of Israel, and we see how God came to them and told them, "I will be your God and you will be my people." How he came to them and said that you are my chosen nation, and how he showed up for them in all these miraculous ways, you know, how he walked with them as a pillar of smoke and by a pillar of fire by night. We see how God called them his children. And yet we watch them as again and again and again, they say back to God, "Yeah, God, that is great. We want you, God. And we're also going to need something else. We want you, God, and we want to hold on to control. We want you, God, and we never really want to have to struggle or wrestle at all. We want you, God, and we're going to hold on to these little g gods over here just to make sure we have all of our bases covered." God had claimed them as his children. He completely loved them, but this relationship between them just never quite seemed to be enough for the Israelites. Time and time and time again, they said, "Give us God," and just fill in the blank. As they wandered around for 40 long years in the wilderness. Now we have Jesus, who is going where? Into the wilderness for 40 days this time. And one has to kind of connect the dots there and start to wonder, will he succeed where they failed? Will being the Son of God be enough for him? Will this loving relationship become the thing that guides his step and gives him direction? Or will he follow in the footsteps of his ancestors? And will he say, "I want God and"? This is actually the Judean wilderness, and this is a very nice picture of it here, but in the Old Testament, they had a name for this place, and when you translate it, the name is Devastation. Kind of get it, right? You look at it, and it's this 35 by 15 mile area of just golden sand and shattered limestone and rugged rocks and hilly dust heaps. No one really wanted to go here. And so as Jesus walks into this wilderness, he is able to be more alone here than he could have been anywhere else. Matthew says that the Spirit led him there. And I'm going to be honest with you all. If the Spirit started leading me there, I would have resisted it. I would have had to have gone like kicking and screaming into it. Because if I get really, really honest with you guys, I don't really like getting alone and quiet. You know, if there's this empty space, I'm pretty good at filling it up with people and places and projects. Maybe you know how to do that well too. Silence, no problem. I'll just flip on the TV in the background or put in my AirPods and listen to a podcast. Nothing to do? Oh, I'm sure there's something frivolous I can add on to my to-do list, or there's always doom scrolling on Facebook. My impulse is to avoid any kind of wilderness experience. Why? Because I know that if I go there to that place, then there's a pretty good chance that what's really stirring in my soul is going to come to the surface. My real desires, my real motivations, they're going to make an appearance. And I'll be honest that a lot of times I don't necessarily like what they look like as they come up to the surface. Sometimes I see I'm a whole lot like those Israelites, wanting God and. something else. But it is in this kind of soul-searching silence and solitude that Jesus is tested, that he is tempted. Matthew goes on and he says, after fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, if you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread. And if I were going to take this temptation and try to boil it down into a word that makes sense to our experience today, here's how I would put it. I would say that the first temptation is the temptation to be important. Jesus was being tempted to do something that would have instantly proven to everyone why he mattered. He could have said the word and he could have created the first century version of Panera Bread right there in the middle of the desolate desert. He could have immediately proven that he was worthy of people's attention and affection. And from that moment on, he would have become known as the man who turns rocks into bread, solidifying his significance, which is something that all of us long for, don't we? We all want to know that we matter. We all want to know that we're capable and that we can contribute. We want to know that we can do things that are needed. We want to be able to prove our significance, and in doing so, verify to ourselves and to others that we are worthy of love and affection. And so what do? We work a little bit longer. We add that extra thing to our plate that's already overflowing. We push ourselves to the edge of exhaustion to perform and produce and to profit. We do whatever it takes to, in essence, turn rocks into bread so that we can feed this hunger inside of us to be important. But while we're so busy doing this, while we're hustling around trying to prove ourselves, here's what we miss. We miss the importance that God has already given to us. We miss that we are already his beloved children and that there is absolutely nothing we could ever do to make him love us any more than he already does in this and in every moment. He loves us not because of what we can do, not because of what we achieve, but because he made us and he saved us and he has claimed us and he has called us by name. We don't have to feed ourselves. We can trust that God will feel this hunger inside of us for importance. That's what Jesus does there in the wilderness. Matthew goes on and says, Jesus answered, it is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. He was resolved. He trusted that God was going to meet both his very real hunger in that moment, but that deeper hunger that was there. He recognized that he was already important as God's son, and so he didn't need God and something else. However, the testing, it wasn't over. While he's still out there in the solitude and the silence of the wilderness, this second temptation comes to him. He says, Matthew says, then the devil took him to the holy city and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. If you are the Son of God, he said, throw yourself down. For it is written, he will command his angels concerning you, and they will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. This temptation, what it does is it takes that first temptation and it kind of like ramps it up a little bit. It takes it from us just wanting to be important to us wanting to be impressive. Beyond wanting to matter, sometimes we want to dazzle. You know, more than making a contribution, sometimes we want to be commended and celebrated. We want to be noticed. We want the applause and the acclaim of others. The other day, I stumbled upon a very cute example of this. It is a school production in which the kids were supposed to kind of just like sing and sway, you know. I was in choir somehow when I was in elementary school, and they let me sway, but they told me I could like move my mouth but not actually sing. It's really bad, y'all. But in this case, here's this kid. He's on stage with all of his classmates, and he recognizes like, this is my moment. This is my time to shine. And he takes full advantage of it. Let's watch together. Oh, And what y'all need to know is he was just getting warmed up. This went on for minutes, y'all. But again, this is like an adorable example of this, right? Like, I will confess, I am impressed, very impressed. And I love his commitment. But I think it captures well the lengths that we will sometimes go to stand out and to wow the crowd. As we get older, we just learn different kinds of moves to get it done, right? Moves like over-functioning or name-dropping. Moves like acquiring as many titles as possible or flexing our possessions to others. But I want us to envision this scene for Jesus. At the temple at that time, there would have been all kinds of people gathered around all the time. They would have been coming from everywhere to bring their sacrifices and to say their prayers to God. And so I want you to imagine like you're there that day. You're like on the ground. You come to the temple to worship. When all of a sudden you look up and you see this man at the tip top of this building. Okay, this is no small structure. I don't know about you all, but when I see him, my heart is going to stop. And then when he leaps off the building, I'm a goner, y'all. I'm out, right? Like, I passed out in that moment. But let's pretend like we stay alert for this experience. Jesus is starting to fall from the tip top of the temple, and we get to watch as angels rush in and rescue him. I want you to imagine what's happening in the crowd as they watch this, right? Like, as the angels lower him down and gently put his feet on the ground, you know all those people standing there are cheering in that moment, right? Everyone there wants to know what this man's name is. In fact, as they learn that this is Jesus, I wouldn't doubt it if they didn't just like start following him everywhere, to the extent that they might just take him in that very moment to overthrow Rome and put him on the throne. But Jesus refused to be a stuntman. He simply replied, "It is also written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Jesus didn't need God and being impressive. He didn't need God and the applause of others, because remember what God has already said to him in his baptism. He's already said that he is well pleased with him. And so he was resolved to work from God's approval rather than working for the acclaim of others. And what happens is, from that moment forward, he lives this life of selfless service rather than a life of self-promotion. The second temptation was to be impressive. But the temptations weren't finished yet. There's one more. And so Matthew continues on. "Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. All this I will give you, he said, if you will bow down and worship me." The final temptation there in the wilderness is the temptation to be influential. You don't have to be a historical scholar to look back on history and to see that people have always been hungry for power. You know, I am a student of history. I went to school to be a history teacher, but you don't have to have studied like that to look back and to know that people have been willing to do really terrible things to try to get prestige and position. People have sought this through politics. They've sought it through business, through education, even religion. But wow, you guys, we've like taken this to new heights in the 21st century. We even have like this whole new profession that has arisen that's called influencers, right? On social media, they're on there and they're telling us everything from like what we should eat to how we get fit to where we should vacation and what gifts we should buy for Christmas. They're also telling our kids what toys that they should ask their parents for, right? Watch out for that Ryan. He's a, y'all know him? Anybody know Ryan? Ryan's toy review. Stay away, parents, because you'll get lots of requests. But these influencers are doing this, and they make lots of money, right? With every click and like and share, they're putting more money in their pocket and they're expanding their power over others. It's just really interesting, because I think what it does is it points to this desire that's really inside of all of us. We have this desire to be influential, to have people who look to us, to be the person that others are following, to be the person who's in charge. But Jesus, he didn't have any time for this temptation. while he actually already held all the power within him that created the universe and everything in it, he refused to wield it. He refused to use it to control or manipulate or to lift himself up for his own gain. Instead, Matthew says, Jesus said to him, "Away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only." He didn't need God and influence. He was resolved to spend his life worshiping and honoring his Father and pointing others to him. This story of the temptations, what it really does is it helps us to see that Jesus took to heart what God said to him at his baptism. Jesus truly understood how deeply he was loved as the son of his Father. And it seems to me that this is the very reason that he is able to stand up and resist these temptations that assault us all at one time or another. There was no need for him to have God and, because he realized he already had everything that he needed in him. And so as he stood there on the edge of his ministry and he took that first step forward, he was resolved to allow this relationship between God and him to be the thing that drove everything else ahead. But it kind of makes me wonder, if that's the case, then maybe sometimes we find ourselves longing for God and just fill in the blank, because for whatever reason, it just really hasn't sunk in just how loved we are as God's children. You know, I guess that there's a good number of us here today that just wonder if we have even made the cut to make it into the family, that if we're even in as a child of God. I say there's a good number of us who also just like can't believe that we could possibly deserve a love so extravagant from anyone, let alone from God. And so we go out and we try to earn it somewhere else. But what if we dared to believe that our God is just that crazy in love with us as his children? What if we started to live from a place where we believe that he looks at us and he is well pleased? How might our lives look different if this loving relationship between us and God became the thing that drives everything else? This is Gregory Boyle here on the screen in the center. He's a Jesuit priest, and he has spent the last 30, 40 years serving gang members in the Los Angeles area. He started an organization called Homeboy Industries, and they are actually the world's largest gang rehabilitation and reentry program. They're in the business of second chances. And the result is that Gregory Boyle, he has had the opportunity to form so many surprising yet beautiful relationships. He tells one story of a man named Cesar. Father Boyle had watched Cesar grow up and had watched him fall into the all too familiar pattern. You know, he'd gotten into a gang and he'd ended up in prison. And so after a few years, though, Cesar gets out of prison. And who's the first person he calls? Father Boyle. He needs some clothes. So Father Boyle takes him shopping for some clothes. And it in and of itself is a hilarious experience because Cesar is quite large in stature. And as Father Boyle puts it, he seems to have lost his volume knob. And so they attracted a whole lot of attention while they were there in the store. But Father Boyle took him home. He went home for the night. But at 3 a.m., his phone began to ring. And it was Cesar. And Father Boyle said that he said what every homie says when he calls in the middle of the night. Did I wake you? Of course he had, right? But Cesar had this burning question that couldn't wait. It couldn't wait until a normal time in the morning. He needed to know the answer to this question right then. And so he says, "You know how I've always seen you as my father ever since I was a little kid?" And then Cesar paused and his voice began to like falter a little bit. It began to crumble. But eventually he was able to force out that question that was in his heart. And the question was this: have I been your son? Father Boyle said without hesitation, "Well, heck yes, you are." And that's the edited version. You can use your imagination. To which Cesar finally exhaled and said, I thought so. And then as he began to sob, he found this resolve within himself. And he said, then I will be your son, and you will be my father, and nothing will separate us, right? And Father Boyd assured him, that's right. In his book, Tattoos on the Heart, this is what Father Boyle said about that exchange. He said, in this early morning call, Cesar did not discover he has a father. He discovered that he is a son worth having. The voice broke through the clouds of his terror and the crippling mess of his own history, and he felt himself beloved. God, wonderfully pleased in him, is where God wanted Cesar to reside. That is my prayer for each and every one of us today, that we would discover that we are sons and daughters worth having, and that we would begin to move through this life resolved to live as beloved children of God.